And like I said, I will send these slides so that you will have access to these later. Okay, so information seeking in a research process. We'll be going over some things that you might already know, refreshing our knowledge, and then I'll be showing some examples and then giving you time to practice on your own. So be ready to practice on your own topic. So you may do some searches while giving you the examples. I will be giving you time then to practice. Okay, so in the academic information seeking process, there are different stages. I'm not going to go through this in detail, but the important things that we are talking about today are search terms and how to combine them, how to combine the search terms, and then obviously finding sources and then evaluating the sources and how to find scientific articles, for example. And then if I have time, I'll be showing you also about managing references, how to save your references. Okay, so these kinds of things for information seeking. And I'm mentioning in our information seeking plan. So we have an online course, Libesys Systematic Information Seeking, that you can take. And on this course, you will be creating an information seeking plan, and this plan will guide you through the information seeking process. And if you take the course, you will also then get feedback on your plan, so it will help you further. I will be mentioning the course again at the end. So, but yeah, we have a course for information seeking, and then also an information seeking plan. You can also use it without this course. All right, so before we go in the databases and start trying to find any sources, I'm reminding you of the differences between everyday information and scientific information. So when we are looking for scientific articles, what comes to your mind? What kind of articles are they? So usually it's published in a scientific journal, right? And it's published for the academic community, written by a researcher, and usually it's peer-reviewed. So, for example, here we have two articles about sports supplements, and this one is from a magazine or a newspaper. So this is not scientific article, it's just general information, for general public. And then the academic article talking about sports supplements. It's a research article. It's published in a scientific journal. The authors are researchers, and it's meant for the research community. And this article has been peer-reviewed. So where something is published matters, and also who it's by, who it's for, and things like this. So when we are searching for example, scientific articles, we go to scientific databases, and then in the database, we can search for scientific articles that have been published in scientific journals. That was the word scientific many times repeated. But yeah, so this is the basic sort of, or the basis of what we are doing here, knowing where to search for to find academic articles, for example. And I'm talking about academic articles, but also in business and entrepreneurship studies, besides academic articles, information is also published in books and conference papers. Do you remember, or do you have an idea what conference papers are? Conference papers are something that researchers write when they attend a conference and they give a presentation there. And conference papers, they may be peer-reviewed or they may not be peer-reviewed, and I'll be showing you some examples of those later. But yeah, so publication types, document types in which research is published in your field. So publication types, for example, articles, books, and conference papers, these are what we are looking for. Okay. And yeah, so again, scientific articles are published in scientific journals and they are collected in databases. So when you are searching in a database, then you are searching the journals in that database. And I have a link to an article talking about different types of academic articles. But let's move on from that. Any questions that come to mind about the differences between everyday knowledge, scientific knowledge, and finding? All right, so at this point, you can come to Yukdoc if you'd like, and we'll start doing some searches starting from here. So if you'd like, you can open Yukdoc in your browser. Let me post the link in the chat just in case. Okay, so starting in Yukdoc. Yukdoc is the library search portal, and Yukdoc is where you access all the online books, databases, anything like that. So always access everything via Yukdoc. All right, so and you'll have to jump a bit between my Zoom presentation and between your browser. So I'll try to give you time. And if you miss anything, if you don't know what we are doing or anything like that, always just ask at any point. And in the chat, you can send a private message to me if you choose my name from the list. All right, so in Yukdoc, start thinking about your topic. And what are the key concepts of your topic? And we'll do a preliminary search. It's a difficult word for me. So in Yukdoc, with the key concepts of your topic that come to your mind at this point, do a search. And we'll see what kind of search results you can find in Yukdoc, and then we'll move on to the actual databases. And I'll always write sort of these assignments in chat. So do a search in Yukdoc and use your key concepts as search words. I'll give you a moment here. And look at your search results. What kind of search results can you see there? Are they journals? Are they books? What are they? And then you can also, for example, you open one of the search results and see where your search words are in the information of the search results. So for example, this is a bad example because this is a journal, there's not much information. Let's go back. All right, so let's look in my, I'm gonna show you in my Zoom presentation here. I just searched for international business. So in the Yukdoc basic search, you can find individual journals and books. So mostly books. So the UCDoc basic search is mostly for finding books. And then you can also find some individual journals, and there might be like theses, there might be dissertations here. And yeah. And let's open one of these books. Not a very good example because there's not much information here, but anyway, so when we are searching in a database, in a search portal, we are looking for hits. So for example, your search words will appear in the title, in the abstract, or in these keywords or subject terms here. In this case, it's in the title, it's also in the subject terms, subject words. So in UCDoc, the search cannot reach sort of the actual book, the contents of the book. So even if these search words would appear in the book, UCDoc doesn't know that. So only sort of the information of the book, the name, the abstract, subject words. Those are where you can get the hits. When you use keywords, they will appear in the title, abstract, or subject terms, keywords. All right, let me ask you, you can answer in the chat, yes or no. So if there was a thesis here, so is a thesis, a master's thesis, a good scientific source? You can answer in the chat, yes or no. And the question is a master's thesis a good scientific source that you can use as a scientific source? Very good. So no, and no, but the references can be useful. Exactly. So if you find a master's thesis that is something related to your subject, you can check out the bibliography and see if there are any references that you might be interested in. Good. All right. Any questions about UCDoc so far? Anything that seemed weird or anything that you didn't understand, or anything that worked well, or anything like that? Maybe not at this point. Let's move on, and we'll see how to find, how to access our databases in UCDoc. So this is one of the most important things here that we are learning or refreshing our knowledge on, how to access the databases and what are the databases that you can use. So if you already know the name of a database that you'd like to use, so for example, Scopus database or Business Source Elite database, then you can search with the database's name in UCDoc basic search. So this on the UCDoc front page where we searched previously, this is the UCDoc basic search. And if I already know the name of a database, I'll just search for the database, and then I will have this available online link here and database interface, or tietokannan käyttöliittymä in Finnish. And then I will access this database. So I will use UCDoc to access one database at a time. And this Business Source Elite, for example, it's an EBSCO database. Like I said earlier, databases contain journals. They have a collection of journals, mostly published by EBSCO because it's an EBSCO database. And there will always be some overlap between different databases. They will have some of the same articles, some of the same journals. EBSCO is a publisher. EBSCO has many databases. Business Source Elite is one of them. And the link database interface will take you to the database. All right, but what if you don't know what kind of databases there are? So in that case, you can browse the databases, see what kind of databases there are. And to do that, you will go to search functions. So right here between next to Yukdoc logo in the dark blue bar on top, we have search functions, and then we have browse for databases. So search functions and then browse for databases. And then this will give you all the databases that we have, and then we are going to choose our research area, and we are going to choose business and economics. So on the right side here, research area, and you click business and economics. And this will give us 50 databases, and then we can still narrow it down a bit by choosing articles. And this will give you 8 databases that have articles. But actually, we can also take a look at this longer list here, because this has some databases that might be useful for you that aren't included in this 8 databases. So for example, we have Abiinform Trade and Industry, which has information about trade and global trade and industry. And also this Asian and European Business Collection might be useful, but these are also included, if I remember correctly, I'll check in Abiinform Complete, so you can go directly to this database. Well, then we have Business Source Elite here. And if I do narrow this search a bit more so that we take these articles, so below Business and Economics here, articles, and then these 8 databases would be also good for you, and you could use Business Source Elite and then Abiinform Complete and Scopus, and then maybe also some of these others like Wiley, JSTOR, or Emerald Insight. So I would recommend using Business Source Elite, Abiinform Complete, and Scopus, and possibly some of these others. All right, so let's go to the Business Source Elite database, and we'll talk about search terms and how to combine them, and then seeing how you can go on about searching in the database, using the database. So I'm going to post the link in the chat just in case. So the link to Business Source Elite database. And then please click database interface, and you'll be asked to log in with your university credentials. So log in with your university credentials. And we will always access these databases via Yukdoc to get access to these databases. So you cannot Google the name of the database and access it that way. You will have to go via Yukdoc to get access. And here we are in this database. Maybe this looks familiar, maybe you've used this before. And let's have a look at how you can come up with keywords. I recommend that you make a mind map or a list of your key concepts and their synonyms. So make a mind map or a list. You can take some paper if you have a notebook or something, or you can just open like a Word document or something and list your keywords so you don't have to try to remember and increase that cognitive load in your brain. So write it down. I'm going to jump to my my slides here, and I'm going to jump forward a little bit here. Okay, so we have some tools that you can use when you are coming up, thinking of the keywords that you can use. So obviously, just on top of your mind, what comes to your mind, and also when you are doing some searches, you can look at the articles, see how they talk about this topic, what kind of words they use, and take those, but also you can use dictionaries and different kinds of thesauri, subject terms dictionaries. And in the databases, we will search, we will use English search words. Most of the search results are in English. And check how some, you know, if you forget what something is in English, use dictionaries, and you can use obviously any dictionary that you'd like, but I recommend using Moth dictionaries, which are available via YukDoc. So, links to e-resources and Moth online dictionary. So, these are some very good dictionaries that you can have access to via YukDoc. So, links to e-resources and Moth online dictionary. And we have these two tabs here. And if I choose Moth dictionaries, you can have, some, for example, Danish and English or other languages. And sorry, jumping a bit in my slides here. Okay, so using dictionaries, that's one tool that you can use. And when you are thinking of your search terms, it's very important that you think of synonyms or alternative concepts. So for example, if my topic had something to do with digital money, and I'll search for digital money, but digital money or things related to it, it might also be, there might also be the concept electronic money. So maybe the article doesn't mention digital money at all, but it mentions electronic money. And so in language, we have usually multiple words that can mean the same thing. So if you just use one word search, then you will miss all the other search results that might be relevant, where the same topic is discussed using some other words. So that's why it's important when you think of your keywords, think also of synonyms. Are there synonyms? Could you say the same thing in a different way? And in the search, if you have, for example, two words, two alternative words, don't need to do two separate searches, but you can add all the alternative concepts in the same search using OR in capital letters. So in this case, I would put digital money or electronic money. So in the databases, you have to be able to tell the database what you want to find. And for example, in this case, the database would understand that, okay, you want search results where either digital money or electronic money is mentioned. So OR in capital letters tells the database that these are alternatives. So you will find search results with either of these concepts. And sometimes it's can be difficult to think of synonyms. And in this case also, use dictionaries, use other tools. In the Moth dictionary, we have this other tab where it says other dictionaries. And here we have thesaurus, thesauri is the plural. And these are dictionaries that give you synonyms. So for example, collaboration in business or something. So if you if your topic had something to do with collaboration, and then you need to think of synonyms for collaboration, you can use, for example, the dictionary here, this tab. And for example, I have Oxford Thesaurus of English. So for example, for collaboration, you can have different synonyms like cooperation or teamwork or joint effort or working together and so on. So you could have these as alternative concepts in your search. And other tools that you can use. And let me look in the chat. Good question. In the chat, yes, there can be more. So you can, however many alternative concepts you have, you can list them here. And for example, I could add virtual currency. It's not exactly same, but. And then if I have more, just adding or and then adding the alternatives. Okay, so like I said, it's important to have these alternatives or synonyms or think, could you say the same thing in a different way? And if I use these tools, it will help me to come up with these alternatives and help me to come up with words related to my topic in general. And we have, this is Uso in Finnish, and this is one tool that you can use. So I've posted a link in the chat. So in here, you can also try to find like, this is kind of a dictionary. You can try to find a word and then you will see like, let's see if it has international business. Let's see, international accounting. Well, in this case, this is not very useful because it only has like one broad concept. And yeah, but there might be like related terms and narrowed terms, and sometimes it's big list. Let's open accounting. So for example, narrow concepts and then related concepts. There might be, there's no related concept here, but yeah. So this is a tool that you can use to come up with more words that you can use as search words. And then in the database, we actually have, it has its own thesaurus. So you can also use this. Let's see if it has, for example, the money. Okay, and in this case, so I clicked thesaurus in the blue bar here. And then I can search for different words that I might use as search words. And in this case, it says digital money, use electronic money. So it would, in this database, electronic money is, it's a subject term. So this dictionary, this thesaurus, it will recommend you using this, but this is also perfectly good. So this is a thesaurus where the database lists words that it uses to describe the articles in the database. And that's why it has these recommendations that instead of this, use that, because these are standardized subject terms. But digital money is also a perfectly good search term. It's just not an official key, official subject term in this database. Okay, so I click electronic money to see if it offers any related terms here. It does. So now I'm looking at the concept electronic money, and then I have suggestions for related terms in this case. And these are not exact synonyms, but these might be, for example, virtual economy related terms. All right, so do you get the idea that these are tools that you can use to come up with search terms that these help you to find more words that you can use in your search? And let me show you here in the database then. How to combine the search terms. I have, let's do four. All right, so this is what I was showing you earlier, all in capital letters for different alternatives. But now if I search just with this, I might get search results where, if I remember. Anyway, so you might get search results where these words are not appearing together as a concept that you meant. So you meant to find digital money or electronic money. In some cases, it's not about those two words together, for example, electronic money, but it can be also electronic wallets and also, we have other good examples, digital dollar or so on. Earlier when I also was searching for these same things, I think I had some other search terms as well. I got search results with like dirty money and so on. So how to make sure that the database understand that this is a concept and you want these words to appear together in the search results? You will put this in quotation marks. Yes, thank you, in the chat. Very good. So using quotation marks, for example, like this, you will make sure that these words appear in the search results together and written exactly like this. And so if you have a concept that has two or more words or some phrase that you want to find an exact hit for, then you can use quotation marks. What about if I use this asterisk, star sign, for example, currents, and then I put this asterisk, what does this do? Do you remember?
All the variation of that word ending.
Yeah. Exactly. So if you have a word that in the search results, it might be currencies or currency, you can truncate, cut a word so that you have all the different forms of the word. And also if there are different ways to write a word, for example, organizational, this can be with a Z, Z, Z or S. So to get different writings, you can also use this star sign in the middle of the word and replace the word or the letter that might vary in different, how it's written in different ways. So then you would get search results with organizational or organizational. All right. And now, very important box to tick here. Which box do we want to tick here in this limit two options? We want to tick scholarly peer-reviewed journals. So earlier at the beginning, I mentioned, okay, academic articles are peer-reviewed and in the databases, we can usually limit the search results to peer-reviewed sources.
May I quickly add that using a star in the middle of sentence or a word, it actually means everything. So if you want to just limit it to one character, you need to use the question mark.
Yeah, that might also be true. Sure. But also this works like one character in the middle, so it will replace one letter, one character.
Yeah, that also worked, but it's all, yeah. It also includes everything like Ella, such as electronic money.
That's right.
Or or spaces between or anything like that.
Yeah, that's right. So if you want exactly one letter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might be a thing with very, very, very specific topics that makes a difference.
Yes, very good addition. Thank you. Great. All right. So let me check the time. All right. So what we'll do next is that I'll give you a few minutes to do some searches here in this database, or you can use another database if you like. And you can ask, post any questions in the chat for me, for example, if you have any problem. And in the chat, Juha, I will answer you in a minute. But yeah, so think of the keywords of your topic and try to combine them in different ways in the search, and then limit the search results to scholarly or peer-reviewed journals. So click this box here. All right, so I'll be quiet now for a few moments and you can have some time to maybe find some academic articles here. And I'll write in the chat the sort of assignment here. All right, and then I'm going to interrupt your searches here. Let's take a look at some other things here in the database. And also answering the question in the chat about the PDF. So how to open these articles? If we take a look at these results here, you can see, okay, for example, this article, there's the PDF link. But in some of these other articles, there's no PDF link, but there is check availability link. This check availability link, it will take a moment to appear. So it's because we are working off campus. But yeah, so there will be a check availability link with each article. And if there is no PDF here, then you can click check availability link. And for example, in this case, this article is not available. So in the database, there unfortunately will be some articles that are not available with the university credentials. So, yeah, so the databases are not such that everything in the database is available to you, but there will be some articles that are not available, unfortunately. Let's see if we have another example here. Oh, now I'm only getting examples where it's not available. Usually they are mostly available, but these seem not to be. Well, anyway, if this article was available in some other database, this link would give you the link to the other database where the article is available. So it would say full text available. First thing here, it said full text available and then a link to another database. So that's how you could access this article. And because of this, I would not recommend limiting to full text options, because if you do so, then you will only get these articles that are, the PDF is available here in this database, and then you will miss some other sources that there's no PDF right here, but then there's the check availability link, and then you will get access to that article in another database. And you can also, if you want, download a tool for your browser called Lean Library. And this Lean Library is a browser extension that gives you suggestions or gives you tips where to get the article that you are looking for. So it will help you find, help you access some of the articles that you may not find otherwise, or may not get the full text otherwise. I'll post the link in the chat. And always, you can always check in UCDoc if something is available or not to you with university credentials. So UCDoc will always tell you if something is available, but you will have to know, is this a book? Is this an article? So for example, if you need to know if a book is available with university credentials, an ebook, I mean, then you can search with the book's name here in the search box. And then in UCDoc, we also have the separate search called International E-Material Search. You can find it in UCDoc front page. It's below the search box, International E-Material Search. And there you can actually find articles. And you can check if an article is available. You can also find the International E-Material Search. If you are searching in the basic search, then there's these different tabs here, and International E-Material Search is here, the last one. So opening that. And in this International E-Material Search, if there is an article that you are not sure how you can get access to it, for example, if you find an article listed in a master's thesis bibliography, for example, then you can copy the article's name and put it here in UCDoc International E-Material Search and get access, see if it's available. And this is also a tool that you can use to check if an article is peer-reviewed. So if you find an article, for example, you're looking at the master's thesis bibliography, you find an article, or if you are using Google Scholar and you find an article there. In Google Scholar, you can't limit the search results to peer-reviewed journals, and you have to be a bit more careful with the search results or the sources that you choose from there. So if you find an article in Google Scholar, you can come here to YukDoc International E-Material Search and use the article's name to search for the article here. And then you can limit the search results to peer-reviewed sources, but also there will be a tag at the article telling you if it's peer-reviewed here. So for example, there you can see there's a peer-reviewed tag right here in the article's information. And I think I'm going to quickly show a tip for Google Scholar, and maybe then we'll change the subject to research data management. So a tip for using Google Scholar, to get more full text options, to be able to access more articles in Google Scholar, also access Google Scholar via YukDoc, like you would access a database. So Google Scholar is not a database, it's a search engine. But yeah, so Google Scholar in YukDoc basic search, and then click database interface as if it was a database. And then here we are in Google Scholar, but if you look at the browser address, it says etsproxy.u.fi. So it will tell you, show you that you are using Google Scholar with the university credentials. And now, if I do a search in Google Scholar and see, for example, any article that might be here, lots of books, there are some books here. This is an article, but it's old. Let's try that one. So in Google Scholar, yes, you will find some articles, some scholarly articles, but there will be other things also in the Google Scholar search results. And if I want to check an article, if it's a scholarly article, if it's peer-reviewed, I can copy the article's name, and like I said, I can go to YukDoc International E-Material Search and use the article's name to find out if it's peer-reviewed. So here I am in the International E-Material Search, and I pasted the article's name, and let's see if this is a peer-reviewed article. Probably is, yeah. So it's peer-reviewed, it says right here. Or you can limit the search results to peer-reviewed and see if it remains in the search results here. All right. So to summarize what we have been talking about, I've been showing you examples of how to find books, and that was in YukDoc basic search, and then how to find articles, and that was using some of the databases that you can access via YukDoc. Then we talked about using search terms and combining them, and limiting the search results to peer-reviewed sources. And the different ways to combine the search words, such as using quotation marks, usually work in every other database as well. Some of the databases might look a bit different from each other, but basically work the same. For example, Scopus, which is a good database to use. It's a multidisciplinary database, so it's not just for business and economics, but other fields as well. Looks like this. And in this case, you could you if needed, you could add search fields using the add search field function. And let's do search. I had to move the zoom boxes to get to the search button. Here we go. And in Scopus, the search results look like this, and this view at publisher link would take you to the article. Let me show you one more thing here. If I look at the document type, so on the left side here, document type, we have these different document types here. So article would be the basic scholarly article, and then review would be a review article, so a literature review of a topic. Review articles are a type of scholarly articles. And then we have conference papers. And conference papers are, you can use those as sources, as scholarly sources as well, but sometimes they are not quite as good. And they might not be peer reviewed, they might not be as sort of monitored, and the publication process might be not as strict as, for example, for scholarly articles. But conference papers, yeah, they're fine usually. And there are some really highly regarded conferences. And conference papers, you can usually find them in the same databases, in any databases that you are using to find, for example, scholarly articles as well. So they are mixed in there. And conference papers, they might look similar to scholarly articles, or they might be a bit shorter. And usually in the sort of publication name, there might be the word conference or the word proceedings. For example, proceedings of the blah, blah, blah international conference. Yeah, and in the Scopus database, you cannot limit the search results to peer-reviewed sources, but you can limit to, for example, articles and review articles and maybe conference papers. All right. Any questions about information seeking before we change the subject? Okay. No questions at this point, so we'll change the subject to research data management. And here in my slides, I've tried to sort of make sure that I have the most important things here, and I've tried to make this as simple as possible. And I'm talking about research data management, and as part of research data management, I'm also talking about how to handle personal data. So information about people. So what we are talking about with research data management. So your research data might be, for example, interviews or surveys or some kind of numerical data. So this is what you are analyzing in your research, in your thesis. And to help you navigate research data management. So we are talking more about the management side of the data. So how to make sure that the data stays coherent, how to make sure that you are, for example, properly taking care of the personal data that might be in your data. And we are not talking about, for example, how to analyze the data and stuff like that, but how to manage the data. So we have a data management plan for students. And a data management plan, again, a bit like the information seeking plan, the data management plan will help you to do your research properly. So it will help you take into account everything that needs to be taken into account. And in research, usually a data management plan is required. For example, a funding organization might require it. But it's a good idea anyway, even if it's not required, because in your research data, in how you are handling things, there are some things that are very difficult to take care of afterwards. So I strongly recommend that you create a data management plan. Like I said, we have this one for students that I've linked here. We've created this as part of our course, which I'll show you later. So the data management plan will help you work with the personal data, help you with data security, coherence of data, documentation, and stuff like that. I have here on the right side this little comic that I love. But yeah, so with the help of the data management plan, you'll be more systematic and be more prepared. All right. So now, if you are collecting your own research data, or also if you are getting a data set from, for example, the department or a research group, ask yourself these three questions. I think these are the most important from this perspective of data management. Firstly, is there personal information or personal data? So data about people, data about the research participants. And if there is, you will do a data privacy notification. I'm talking about this more in detail next. And then also ask, is there copyright protected material? For example, some students might be studying some YouTube videos or some stuff like that, something that has a copyright. And lastly, important question, how secure and protected is your data? So we are starting here, and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit and start with personal data, because I think this might be most important to actually go through with you and to make sure that we have enough time. I'm starting with this. So if you think of your own thesis and you think of your own research data, are you collecting your own research data? Are you, for example, doing interviews? Are you doing survey? Questionnaire, anything like that. So if there are people participating in your research, for example, if you are interviewing people, then you are most likely dealing with personal data. And the concept of personal data is very broad. So all data related to a person can be personal data in different cases. So what is personal data? So obviously, like, a name is a personal data item, but then things like age, profession, and the voice of the person or the image of the person. And for example, if you are doing interviews, you are always handling personal data in interviews, because there will be at least the voice of the person in the interview recording. So personal data can be like name, age, profession, but also things like unusual tattoos or unique opinions, anything that could be used to identify the person. So anything that could be used to identify the person. For example, if the only information is that the person is Finnish, for example, that is not personal data, because there are many Finnish people, and you cannot identify one person based on the information that they are Finnish. But if they are Finnish, they live in this small town, and they are the rector of this school, then you would most definitely be able to identify that person, because it's a small town, there's only one rector or headmaster. Or similarly, anything else like in a scenario where you could identify a person, but it's not about whether the person can be identified based on your data. So even if you just have, for example, the profession and the voice of the and stuff like that, you are handling personal data. So again, keep in mind that if there are people participating in your research, then you are most likely handling personal data, and just accept that you are handling personal data. So it's not about whether the person can be identified based on your data alone. If you have information related to a person, that's personal data usually. And then we also have special kinds of personal data. For example, health-related data, political opinions, religious beliefs, sexuality, stuff like that. That must be, you must take extra care when you handle these types of usually sensitive things. And it's very important to know that you cannot collect any unnecessary data. So you can only collect data that you need to answer your research questions. So no unnecessary questions, no unnecessary information of the person. Okay. Do you think you understand what personal data means? Any questions, any comments? Okay, good. I see a thumbs up in the chat. Good. So now what to do if you do handle personal data? So what you need to do, what you are required to do, is create a privacy notice. And there is a template on the university website. I have a link there in the slide. And the privacy notice is basically a way to tell the research participant what you are doing with their data. So you fill in the privacy notice and you describe your research and how you are handling the research data, how you are making sure that it's secure. So in the privacy notice, you tell about how you are handling the research data, the personal data, I mean. And then you give the privacy notice to the research participant, for example, the person that you are interviewing. And in the privacy notice, the point is to inform the person about their personal data, how it's collected and handled. And there's no, like, you don't have to print a paper out and give it to the participant. You can send it via email to the participant beforehand. Or if you are, if you do a survey or questionnaire, you can link it in the survey in the beginning, in the sort of info part in the beginning, or in other ways, you provide it to the research participant. And then I have here that also, you should also send the privacy notice to the university registry. And this is something copied straight from the university instructions. So it says there that you should submit the research notification and then the privacy notice to the university registry, and there's the email address. And it's instructed that you do this at the end of your master's thesis project, so after your master's thesis has been approved. I don't know, I would think that I would forget to do that in the end, but that's how it says in the instructions at the moment. All right, so if you handle personal data, then you will need to do a privacy notice, and you will give the privacy notice to each research participant, and also at the end of your master's thesis, you will send it to the university registry. And in the privacy notice, I think it asks who the data controller is, and that is you as the research, as the student working on the master's thesis. If you are collecting your own research data, you are the data controller, which means that you are responsible for the data. But then there might be like other situations. For example, if you are working with a business, or if you are working with an organization, or if you are working with a research group, then you might not be the data controller, but the business might be, or the research group might be. And let me see if I can find that. Yeah. And if you do work, for example, in a research group, or if you work, do your master's thesis for a business or for an organization, then it's a good idea to have some kind of written agreement about the different things. About, for example, what are your responsibilities regarding the data? Who is responsible for the data? And in some cases, if you are interested in continuing your studies after master's thesis, possibly with the same data, then it would be really important to agree right at the beginning if you are allowed to keep working with the same data after your master's thesis. So if you are working with anybody collecting the research data, then it's a good idea to make a written agreement about things concerning the data handling and collection. All right, let's jump back here.
Then, I have actually a question about the previous, because my thesis works with somewhat sensitive, or actually very sensitive, company data.
Yeah.
So how I've tackled it at the planning stage is that I will be doing two theses, one for the company and one for the, well, basically for school.
Yeah.
But this means that the school version will be very stupid and dumb. And I mean, it's no research because I cannot use the data for it.
Yeah.
So is there like a way for me to kind of like do one thesis but have it kind of like locked away for security purposes or something like that?
Yeah. Good question. That is a common way to combat this problem, that you basically do two different theses, or you do a thesis and then a presentation for the company. A master's thesis is a public document, but you can have it published so that it's in limited use. But yeah, it will be published anyway. And yeah, so you can do a master's thesis so that there will be, for example, a separate part of the master's thesis that is not published because it has this sensitive information. That is possible. But yeah, you will have to have some version of the master's thesis that then can be published.
Yeah, but the published version is the one that is being, it's the one that gets the grade.
Yeah.
And if I can't use any of the data that I'm supposed to use with the thesis, then, you know, it's kind of like flat.
Yeah, I understand.
Whole paper.
Yes. Yes, I understand. Is there any way that you can work with the data so that you can have it on a more general level, so that there are none of those very sensitive data? But if that's not possible, then I think it's okay if you do use the data in the thesis that is going to be graded, and then when it has to be published, then you will need to choose which part of the data, part of the thesis will be published, and then you will have some part of the thesis sort of, you divide it into parts, if that's possible. I don't know if it's possible in your case.
Yeah, but, well, I could, if I could do it how I want it to be done, it would be that everything else besides the, I'm doing interviews, so the... Mm-hmm. What is it? Written out version of the interviews and basically the research part. Those would be hidden. That would be the best case scenario.
That's right.
But I from what I've understood, that is not possible nowadays.
Yeah, it's not possible nowadays because there was I don't know if it's law or if it's just something else, a regulation that master's thesis must be public, but I actually put up the instruction that we have. So yeah, the thesis can be published so that it's restricted, so that it's not openly online, so that if somebody would try to read the thesis, it's not openly online, but it can only be accessed with a certain computer at the university. And then if there are things that you need to keep secret, then they will be in a different document that will not be published. And yeah, I think it might be a good idea to also, if you want, you could also ask our publication services. They might be able to tell you even more.
But this is actually like in a broader view, a really, really, really dumb thing, because a lot of companies usually, if they take in thesis workers, they want to research things that are either leverage them in the market or otherwise either sensitive or the benefit is big. So they don't want the information to leak out. So for people applying to positions of thesis worker or doing thesis on the side on their job, that's actually a really, really, really bad, bad thing for them.
Yeah, I understand. I agree.
I was actually battling the same thing, and I think Mari Suoranta definitely gave me like great instructions for it. So I recommend you contact her as well. But the thing is that in my case, for example, I will do the published thesis and then add a separate, NDA approved appendix for the thesis, which can be either it can be like basically secret for a number of years or totally separate from the thesis itself. So I think that's how you kind of need to do it, because according to the new law or legislation, it cannot be completely like secretified, or I don't know what the right term for that is. But yeah, I think also contacting Mari might be helpful, because she definitely like laid out the structure for me in terms of how to progress with my thesis.
Yeah, well, I gotta ask her about it. She's my instructor also, so let's continue onwards.
Yeah, but very good that you brought that up, and I posted in the chat, there is the address if you want to contact our application services, and maybe you can tell them about this as well. Maybe they have also some suggestions. Okay. Good. So we talked about personal data and rights and agreements concerning the data if you're working with somebody else. The next important thing that I would like to mention is coherence and quality of the data. So making sure that your data stays as it was originally. So for example, if you are working with the data and then you are, for example, doing different kind of tables, groupings, you are creating sort of new layers of the data. Or you are moving the data from one place to another. In these cases, you might make mistakes, or you might sort of group the data in a way, or present the data in a way that actually it's not as it was originally, the actual information in the data. So it might change what it sort of says in the data accidentally. So how do you make sure that the data stays coherent and doesn't change? For example, if you have an interview recording and then you need to transcribe it. And the number one tip here would be to keep an original copy of the data. So always keep an original copy of the data. And you can check back later if there's any suspicion that there might be some mistake or some confusion or anything. And it's also a good idea to keep backup copies of different stages of your data. So then that if anything happens, you can always come back to the previous version. So keep copies of different stages of what you are working on. All right. And then if there's copyrighted data, this is not maybe as relevant in your cases. Maybe you are not collecting poems written by the participants usually. But if there was any kind of copyrighted material, it's a good idea to make a separate agreement on the copyrighted material. For example, if you are collecting copyrighted material from the research participants. And if there are images, for example, somebody else has taken like pictures that you want to use in your thesis, it is possible as an image citation, if that image is clearly needed to support the text. So then you can also publish an image as part of your research, as part of your thesis. Okay, but that's maybe not that important. We'll move on from there. And going a bit, going back to personal data a little bit. So pseudonymization or anonymization is usually required if possible. Anonymization is very hard And it might also render the data useless if all, because anonymization means that all personal data is removed and is not possible even for you to connect the data to the participants. So pseudonymization is usually enough and it's done to protect the research participants. So you should pseudonymize the data if possible. Okay, moving on. And one more thing about personal data. People usually say that, oh, and then I also need a consent form. Well, actually, no. In the case that in the privacy notice, it asks for your legal basis of collecting personal data. So you need to give a legal basis for collecting personal data. And in research, public interest is usually the legal basis. And this means if you used consent as legal basis, then you would need a separate consent form. But in research, we use public interest as legal basis, and then we don't need a separate consent form where the participant consents to their personal data being collected. But it's ethically a good idea to ask the participant in some way if they consent to participating in the research. So it's not about consenting to the collection of personal data, but participating to the research. And the participant can consent to participating after they have been informed what is happening with their personal data. And the consent can be indicated by checking a box or just by simply proceeding with the research after being informed. So if the participant reads the privacy notice and then, for example, in the survey, proceeds to answer the survey, that's enough. Okay, so consent, it depends on what you say is your legal basis in the privacy notice. And if you say it's public interest, as you should, then you don't need a separate consent form. And then a couple more important things, data security. So if you have any kind of sensitive data like personal data or company secrets, anything like that, you will need to save your data somewhere where it will be safe. It will be automatically backup copied. And that place is the university U Drive. So please don't save any data in, for example, Google Drive. That's no, it's not allowed if there is any sensitive data. So save your data in the university U Drive, and you can access that from home with university VPN. And I have linked a guide, and if there are any problems, which there sometimes is, you can ask the digital services. I've linked them also there. Yeah, so no Google Drive, and preferably no outside hard drives or USB sticks and stuff like that if it's not absolutely necessary. And then also about data security, if you are doing interviews, then you will need to use a real recorder, and that you can loan those from the department. So a real recorder, not your phone. And if you need to do online interviews, it's okay to use university's Zoom, but make sure that it is the university Zoom with this address that I've linked here, added here. And Teams is okay too if there's no special personal data, so health, political opinions, religious stuff like that. So Teams is okay. And if you do any surveys, use WebPropol. Again, no Google Forms and stuff like that, because we don't want to give Google people's personal information. In short, this is what I wanted to say about personal data. Like I said, this is based on law, and I've tried to make it simple here. I hope it's been as simple as possible so that you can understand what you need to do. So to summarize, privacy notice is what you need to do, and you give it to the research participant, and then you need to make sure that you are saving the data in a safe place, University U Drive. Okay, and then a couple more things. It's a good idea regarding like the actual coherence of your research process as large to document everything that you do. So keep a research journal or an Excel document. For example, if you do interviews, you have an Excel document with each interview, the date, the participants, the contents of the interview. Document what you do with the data. And this is actually also required in the law. So document what you do with the data. And never mind the law, it's just good for you to document what you do with the data so that you can be more systematic and more more organized with your research process. And for example, keeping the folders and documents on your computer organized, marking the newest version so that you know which is the newest version, marking the different stages, backup copies and stuff like that, so that you know which is which. And then finally, at the end of the research process, usually it will be that you destroy the data, but you should check with the supervisor how long you should store the data so that your master's thesis can be approved as it should. So how long do you need to have the data stored so that your master's thesis can be approved, and then there won't be any need for it afterwards. And yeah, let's jump to the last slide here. Okay, so we have an online course for learning more about research data management. And it's about the same things that I've talked about here. It's both in English and in Finnish. So two separate courses, one in English and one in Finnish. I have the names there, and also the course material, I've linked it there. It's available without the course. And then we have the data privacy instructions of the, like the official data privacy instructions of the university. I have them linked here as well. So I do recommend that you take this course, because the course assignment is actually creating the data management plan that I talked in the beginning. So the data management plan is the course assignment, and then you will get feedback. Me or some of my colleagues will give you feedback on your data management plan. And similarly, we had jumping back to our information seeking slides and jumping to the end. We also have a course, an online course for information seeking. So it's Libesy Systematic Information Seeking. All right. That's all that I wanted to talk to you about. I hope it was useful to you. I hope it's like clear. If you have any feedback or any comments, I'll be happy to hear those. And now if you have any questions, anything you'd like to add, anything you think I didn't mention that should have been mentioned, we have a couple more minutes so that we can still have your questions. But if no questions, then we will be finishing here. Okay, so if there are no questions, then we can finish here. Like I said earlier, if needed, you can contact me by email. And if you do have any more complicated questions related to personal data, then you can contact the data officer of the university. I'm not a lawyer, so I usually can't answer those more complicated questions about personal data. But yeah, I'll send you the slides, and thanks for participating today, and have a very nice rest of the autumn, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.